You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although the atrocities in Darfur have received more media attention in the last year or so, the killings and violence continue. Joining me again on this show is Mia Farrow, actress and UN Goodwill Ambassador. She's just returned from another visit to Chad, where she met with Darfuri women who begged her to tell their stories to the rest of the world. Ms. Farrow joins me now for the first part of today's Underreported. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
And when did you return from Chad?
Less than a week ago. Actually, I came from Rwanda. We started in Chad, spent some days there, and then went to Kigali. So I guess I got back 4 or 5 days ago.
And why did you go to Rwanda? To make some kind of connection between what had happened during that genocide?
Exactly. There is the obvious connection. What we did was on the Darfur border. This is, as you sort of pointed out, not my first visit to Darfur or the Darfur region. It was, in fact, my seventh. And over and over and over again across Darfur and eastern Chad, the plea was for protection. Tell people what is happening here, they would say. Tell them we need help. And incomprehensibly, we are it's been 4 years, over 4 years since the killing began. So what we've done, I mean, looking at the various points of leverage, just intense scrutiny of the region for me for so long, at least since 2004, when I made my first visit, it became clear of China's role, of China's complicity in the Darfur genocide. As they prepare to help stage the Olympic ceremonies, we look to China, who is pouring billions of dollars into Sudan. Beijing purchases an overwhelming majority of Sudan's oil exports, and their two massive oil companies fund as much as 80% of those oil revenues are applied to fund the Janjaweed, to purchase Antonov bombers, attack helicopters, armored vehicles, small arms, most of them of Chinese manufacture. So we look to China now, who's hosting the Olympic Games, and they've come up with the slogan, One World, One Dream. But I suggest there's one nightmare that China should not be allowed to sweep under the rug. And that nightmare is Darfur.
China been a roadblock to resolving the problem in the UN?
Well, until very recently, the last UN resolution, 1769, they signed on to. If you look at the varying stages of the document, you can see where the sharpest teeth were taken out. And while it's a very welcome first step that they signed on, they didn't veto, and they didn't abstain. They signed on. But it's a baby step, because there are provisional things built into the document where it's just not clear how that's going to work at all. The command structure, where the troops will be coming from, and when. All these things are a huge issue, and what ways the African Union will be there. And they have demanded that it be of African composition. Does that mean more African Union troops, which, as we know, were not their own fault, but they were hugely under-supported, under-armed, under-trained, under-manned, underpaid, under everything by the world community that asked them to do the thing that we all turned away from doing. So we don't really know.
Well, there are 26,000 UN and African Union peacekeepers being sent there. So perhaps just by sheer numbers, we'll see some kind of impact.
I would hope so. And then again, it's a fragile infrastructure that can barely support the people that are there and the humanitarians too. There are logistical problems, and they're not there yet. And meanwhile, the suffering goes on. So I will believe it when I see it. You know, when there is adequate protection, as experienced by those on the ground in Darfur and eastern Chad.
During this recent trip, did you visit the same refugee camps you'd gone to before?
I went to a different one this time. I went to Orakasoni, which is in the desolate Bahai region, which is right on the Darfur-Chad border, but right up next to Libya. And it is a godforsaken place, and it really underlined, plastic sheeting, for example, not to focus on any one thing, because the nightmare just crowds into one's mind. But the plastic sheeting, just the basic thing of we all want the same things, and that includes the people in the camps. They want to be safe. They're not. When we were there, our vehicle was stolen, armed men came into the camps and stole our vehicle.
Do you know who those armed men were?
We don't know. The people don't know. This is what they confront on a daily basis. We came a mini part of a very large horror story. What I mean to suggest by the camps and your question there is that the nightmare goes on, that the infliction of genocide and the suffering upon the people goes on in the camps. The food is insufficient, never varies. They get their ration of sorghum, their bar of soap, if it comes regularly, that's, what is it, once every 2 months? It's less than the minimum required to sustain human life. And the sheeting was given to them 4 years ago, and it's now, because of the relentless sun, the wind and the sandstorms, just flipped into tatters, and no one seems to be able to get them more sheeting. So they can't even shelter from the elements, and it's the rainy season now. The punishment is of a brutal, vicious kind on a day-to-day basis. You can't even think of it as a passive thing. Humanitarians are struggling to sustain these lives. But the young people, especially, they spoke of the university educations that were interrupted, the high school educations. They're longing for education above fifth grade. And they're in the lives and dreams that bombs fell one day, one morning, they woke up, and their lives were changed. And they were not wanted in their own country. In fact, were being hunted down, and they're not wanted in Chad, where they have no human rights whatsoever.
I'm talking with Mia Farrow, who's recently returned from Chad and from Darfur in Sudan, about the worsening conditions. It sounds to me like the refugee camps are getting worse and worse. And you spoke mostly to women. Are there families in these camps, or are there more women than men?
There's a quantity of men, and I don't know where the men are. You know, certainly some have joined rebel groups, and I would if I were a man. But so many dead, and you don't see young boys and men. And there's just so many missing. I mean, one can dispute how many hundreds of thousands have been killed. But it is indisputable that the men are absent from the camps in vast numbers, and it is indisputable that 2.5 million people are in the camps, and that 4 million, I know these statistics are staggering.
It's hard to imagine.
Tune out, but they're dependent on food aid.
And are women generally are more vulnerable in camps of this sort?
Yes.
Was that the case here as well? What kinds of stories did they tell you?
Oh, my gosh. The stories are numbingly similar of those who survived the attack. The Antonov bombers that came and filled the morning skies, and the attack helicopters that rained bombs upon homes, upon families as they slept, as they played, as they said their prayers, as they tended their fields. And those who survived that tried to run, tried to gather their children and run without any plan, without any warning. They fled in all directions, but then came the Janjaweed, government-backed Arab militia, on horseback and on camels, and more recently in vehicles. They came shouting racial epithets and shooting. They shot children as the children ran. They shot the elderly. I spoke to mothers whose babies were shot from their backs or torn from their arms and bayoneted before their eyes. Children were thrown into bonfires. Mother described how they screamed and how they begged for their children's lives. Every time I go back to Eastern Chad, I visit the young man whose eyes were gouged out by Janjaweed knives, a young father, a 26-year-old man. Strong women, in the frailest voices, described their gang rapes, some who were abducted and assaulted over weeks and months. No one came to help us, they said. And they showed me the brandings carved into their bodies and their tendons sliced and how they hobble now. And again, they say, tell people what is happening here. Tell them we will all die. Tell them we need help. You know, and again, in camp after camp and visit after visit, I promise them this, that I will indeed tell people what is happening. I promise, make them this promise, and I've made this promise over and over and over in my heart. But after 4 years, what does this say about us, that we have done nothing? Does never again really only apply to white people? Is that what we conclude?
And is that what these women want you to do most, to just tell the world their story? When you visit with Darfur?
They want to go home, and they think that that the UN will come and that the UN will protect them.
Is that what they see you as, a representative of the UN? Do they know
that
you're a famous actress?
They see me as they don't know that. I explain that I'm a mother. On some of the visits, half, I've gone as a UNICEF representative, and other times I've just gone as a private citizen. And they just know that I'm someone who can tell their story. I tell them that I will tell whatever they want me to tell. And the plea, of course, is for protection, for safety, and above all, always, all the time, they say, we want to go home. We want to go back to our homelands. A man said, this beautiful rain, we were in a rainstorm, I was thinking, oh, God, and it was pouring through his tent onto his wife and children as they sort of cowered in a corner slightly less filled with water of a tent which couldn't have been more than 8 feet by 8 feet. And he said, you know, this beautiful rain is falling on my fields. He said, if I could plant, I've missed 4 planting seasons. If I could go home and plant, he said, the food they hand us, it could go to another country that needs it more, like Somalia.
Before you go, I'd like to ask you about your recent offer to exchange your own freedom for that of the Darfuri rebel Suleiman Jamous. You're still free, so I guess no one took you up on that offer.
No, but they have... they have said that they were going to free Mr. Jamous, and certainly what I didn't really... I had to be prepared for them to take me up on the offer, but realistically, even if they did, I'm an American, and I would have more recourse to international courts of law. I would have more access to publicity. I have less value as a human being at this point than Mr. Jamous, who is of indispensable value to humanitarian aid workers across Darfur.
For what reason?
And to the peace process. Well, what people don't perhaps realize is Mr. Jamous provided safe passage to all the aid agencies in Darfur for years. He is the rebel leader who never picked up a gun. An elder statesman, an elder man who is, in fact, bleeding from his stomach, needs a biopsy, according to the UN doctors who were permitted to see him. And that is a procedure that cannot be performed where he's being detained. So I said, I offer to exchange places. He should be at the peace talks in Arusha. He should be back serving the humanitarians where he belongs as a humanitarian. And he should be back, you know, he should be receiving the medical attention he needs and deserves. So, you know, it was a no-brainer. Yes, I would offer to exchange my place.
Did you get any response from President Bashir?
Well, Bashir or somebody from the government simply said I was silly. And of course I am silly, but I don't think this was silly because it underlined the ridiculousness of detaining one good man. We can do this for one good man, and I wanted people to know who he is and why he's being detained and his immense value, and to shame the government of Sudan into releasing him. Shame on them for doing this. For no good reason, Suleiman Jamous has been detained for 14 months.
Now, the situation, as I said, and as you've said, remains dire, and yet we hardly see anything in the newspapers about Darfur anymore, unless you do something like offer yourself in exchange for Suleiman Jamous.
It was a desperate act, you know.
But are you shocked by how little attention is being paid? Or is it just that we already know this story, nothing has been resolved, and there's nothing more to say?
I believe there's a lot to say, and I believe people in the world, are good people. And that people, most of us, don't want innocent people to be slaughtered. Most of us wish others well and hope for a world in which all people everywhere can be safe. But in the face of power and politics, we tend to feel overwhelmed, and so we step aside and we busy ourselves with our own lives. We give up our responsibility. But surely the future of the world, if there is to be a future, lies in humility and in our human responsibility. And we must draw strength from those who survive the genocide now, and our conviction from the voices of those who did not survive, from the voices of the dead. And I believe that we should gather this strength and join spirits, all the good people of the world. Governments have proven that they don't care. That even the United Nations all are about the self-serving business of whatever it is they do to serve themselves. But if good people of the world would join voices together, and caring people would band together with one voice and demand an end to the terrible crime of genocide.
Mia, what would happen if this whole thing were resolved and they were allowed to return home? Haven't their homes, their farms been destroyed?
Yes, you're so right. Then we would begin the excruciating process that we now see in Rwanda. The agony is endless. We can never do anything about that. So much has been lost that can never be reclaimed. How do you restore someone's child who's died, someone's husband, the trauma that people are living in alone? But I would imagine Darfur will then be clogged with NGOs and with good people who are trying to address the needs and trying to help them rebuild. I would imagine that process will begin. And I see from my visit to Rwanda the process of healing. And I am awed by the courage and the strength that I see there. The agony is palpable, and I see that the sentence is lifelong.
Mia Farrow is a UN Goodwill Ambassador. She's also an actress. And I want to thank you for being with us again.
Thank you so much. Take care.